Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Great I Am Radio, raising the vibration on everyday life matters with heart and soul. Here's your host, Rebecca Johns.
Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon. Wow. You know, you got to love life. There's a first time for everything if you are willing to be a continual student in life. I am your host, Rebecca Johns, coming to you live today from the Rocky Mountains of Tennessee. God bless my cousin who is my my caregiver, my chauffeur, my travel companion this week as we go to visit his mother. Many of you who are watching me on social media already know that. And such a great living experience of the Great I Am Life. As an online extension of the work that I do through the Godly Woman and Heaven on Earth Communities Foundation, our message is the same across all of our platforms. And that is that as spiritual descendants of the Creator, as spiritual beings living an earthly experience, there is a way of living when attuned to the Great Spirit that really does allow us fortitude of strength, prosperity of wisdom, and the abundance of the material and physical realm. Now, I'm not saying it's going to make life perfect. Don't get me wrong. I don't believe that there's life in this world with just no problems. I mean, we're driving up a mountainside right now, and I'm seeing the smooth road, but I'm also seeing the bumpy terrain of the mountainside. I'm seeing the brush of the foliage, but I'm seeing the sharp drop down into some canyons, and that's life for you, you know? Life is life. And there's no way around it. There's only through it and then being finished with it. And so the opportunity I assert is not to attempt to live some flawless life, but it's an attempt to live life as Jesus of Nazareth would have said, as the light and the salt. An opportunity to use the spiritual realm and prowess that we have to live out this earthly experience. And with that, we call it the Great I Am Life. And so with the Godly Woman, of course, we offer holistic health care services. We offer purpose coaching one-on-one and group classes. Many of you are studying with us on the Aramaic Light with the works of Dr. George Lemsa and Dr. Rocco Edico of the Nuda Foundation. And that's what brings us to today's session live, is every month, every third Tuesday of each month, I come to you live with Dr. Rocco Edico on a series that we're calling Let There Be Light, named after a book that he wrote and we spotlighted in January. But this month, we are talking about his commentary that he co-authored with Dr. George Lemsa on the Book of Acts. So help me welcome him back to the airwaves today, Aramaic scholar, teacher, author, public speaker, and of course, minister of the gospel, Dr. Rocco Edico. Welcome to the airwaves, Ravi. How are you today?
Fine. Thank you. Glad to be here with you.
Absolutely. My pleasure. We are driving the mountainside of Tennessee right now on the way to Georgia. So it's good to be with you as well. This is amazing technology to be able to do this on the road.
Yes, it's a good thing you're not driving, though. It would really
right,
be tough.
It's a good thing I'm not driving. No, I'm definitely being spoiled, for sure. God bless my cousin. So today we are talking about the Book of Acts.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, I was going to say the title of it, you know.
Okay, please.
I was just going to say that the title of it in Aramaic is very interesting. They call it the, we just say the Book of Acts, but in Aramaic, it actually says the Book of the Acts of the Blessed Apostles. It says Shlichei Tubane. That means the Blessed Apostles. And they didn't do that when they brought it into English. They just kept it the Acts of the Apostles. And it's interesting because that word blessed, a blessed person, is a person who is in a state of bliss and complete happiness. Because it's from the root of the word, tuwa. And tuwa means to be in total, well, we'd say a total blessed state, but it's really in that complete joy and bliss. And really, that's the title of it in, when you read it in the Aramaic language.
And the word apostle is not the same, right? Apostle comes from the Greek. Can you speak a little bit on that?
Yes, that. Yes, so the word apostle comes directly from the Greek. The way they say it is apostolos. That means an apostle. But in Aramaic, it's shlicha. And shlicha in Aramaic means someone who is sent. So we say a sent one. But when it took on the Greek language coming from Aramaic to Greek, when it took on that Greek touch, it became, and then when the church became more formal and more of an institution, then everyone tried to follow what they call apostolic succession. They all did it, and they lost the simplicity of that word in Aramaic, which means a sent one, not a high-ranking somebody, but just a simple sent one that Jesus sent out. So the 12 apostles are different. Later on, even that term was used for the Apostle Paul, which we'll probably talk some about him today too, because it's in the Book of Acts. And it simply means like we would use the word missionary. But now everyone wants to talk about apostolic ranking and apostolic succession. All that is done by the hierarchy and a sense of a loss of the simplicity that it was originally. And what we have now is more an institutionalized use of that term apostle, because that gives you authority, that gives you the right. And instead of the simple meaning, it is in the Aramaic language. And before everything was institutionalized, before the church became an institution, just like the Jewish faith became an institution when it had a temple and priesthood and all that, it became a tremendous institution and lost the actual spirit of it. And that's when Jesus came, that's what he was bringing back into Judaism, is the real essence and spirituality of it. But now that term apostle is totally different, and every church wants to claim they're from the apostolic succession. And it simply means coming from the teachings of Jesus, and you're sent to teach his teachings. That's plain and simple.
Ravi, jumping right in then to the Book of Acts and your commentaries that you wrote with Dr. Lemsa on the Book of Acts, can you just start jumping in right away with us on who wrote the Book of Acts? What was it about? Who was it for? Give us some context. I think many times we are New Testament, I'm sorry to say it, New Testament idolaters, without really even understanding the gospel and the teaching of Jesus Christ. But can
right.
you talk to us about the Book of Acts and give us context and understanding of what that book really even is?
Well, it was Luke who wrote it, and according to what Eusebius tells us, now Eusebius was a church historian around the 4th century, and he's the first one to give us what was happening in the church, and he claims that Luke was a Syrian from Antioch. Now, of course, I'm using terms that we're used to, but he was really an Aramean or Aramean from Antioch. That's what Eusebius tells us. And, you know, of course, scholars don't get along with so many things. For instance, we don't even know exactly when the book was written. All dating on the book of Acts is the same as the Gospels. They're all conjectural. You cannot prove one date over another, although they have what they call the accepted dates, but it doesn't mean it's the accurate dates of when it was written. But some put it, some scholars and people put it as early as 60 A.D. or C.E., and then others put it way a little past 100 A.D. or C.E., as they say, for the dating. So we really don't know. But definitely Luke spoke Aramaic, and he's a latecomer. He's about the third generation of people who were believing in Jesus. So we've got quite a bit of time now when he started putting together the book of Acts. And he was not there, for instance. Well, let me tell a little bit more about the book of Acts. I told you a little bit about Luke, and I told you a little bit about the dating. But what is the book composed of? What it's composed of, basically, is what took place among the early followers of Jesus in Jerusalem, in the southern part of Israel, that is, in the state of Judah. It was broken up into three states, you might say. It was Galilee, and then the Samaritan area, and then Judea. Well, Luke takes up quite a bit in what took place in Judea and in Jerusalem with the early church. But there's several things missing. What was missing is what took place in Galilee. After the resurrection, the angels instructed the people to go back to Galilee, that they would see Jesus in Galilee. And according to some of the writings in the gospel, that when Jesus appeared to the women after the resurrection, he told them to go tell the brothers to go back to Galilee, and they will see me there, he says. This is what he told the women. So there's a lot we have missing in regard to what took place in Galilee, what happened in Galilee, because Luke basically keeps us in Judea and in what's happened in Judea, and that's when the descent of the Holy Spirit was supposed to have taken place. But really, it took place, and the resurrection appearances took place more in the state of Galilee, because that was Jesus' state. That's where he came from. And that's where a lot of things happened. That's where Peter first saw the resurrected Christ. But we have no record of it. And yet the scriptures themselves tell you, go to Galilee. It was in Galilee that the apostles began to experience the sense of Jesus still was alive, living. And that's when they saw visions of him and were able to communicate with him. And so some of the things that Luke tells us, both in the Gospels and in the book of Acts, is what accumulated later, the stories and legends that accumulated later. So, for instance, when you were reading the book of Acts, and when the descent of the Holy Spirit took place upon the apostles, what we have here is a story where we have the exact wording of Peter's message to the people when he stood up and told the people that the apostles and the followers of Jesus were not drunk, but were filled with the Spirit, And he gives us a long message that Peter spoke. But Luke wasn't there for that. How did he know every single word that came out of the mouth of Peter? He wasn't there for that. What he did is he gathered from the hearsay, and not all the apostles were alive when he came on, because later on he tells us how the brother of John, who we call James, whose real name in Aramaic and was really Jacob, and it tells about his martyrdom. And Luke wasn't there for that, but he gathered all this material, excuse me, to tell us what happened in Jerusalem. This is the first part of the book of Acts, and it was a heavy persecution. That what happened is they had to move the headquarters out of Jerusalem and go into Syria, which in those days it was, of course it was called Syria in those days, but before then it was called Aram. And of course, most people don't realize it, but the language then and was very strong in Syria. It was Aramaic was the language in Syria. So they moved the headquarters from Jerusalem to Antioch, and of course Aramaic. And then the book of Acts takes up with the Apostle Paul, how he got converted to the teachings of Jesus, the experience, the spiritual experience he had. Then it goes on to tell us of all the missionary work. Now, this is when Luke joins with the missionary work with Paul. And how do you know when Luke was there with Paul and when he wasn't there with Paul? Well, when he's writing, Luke will tell you he'll refer to them as they. But when he is there with them, he'll say we. And that's how you know Luke was there experiencing these different things that Paul was doing. But the first part, Luke didn't know anything about Jesus. He never sat under Jesus, even though we have Luke's gospel. And Paul never sat under Jesus. We're talking about the third generation. And Paul carried the light because, you see, Paul himself was from Asia Minor. He was from the city called Tarsus, which is the southern part of Asia Minor. And today, we don't call it Asia Minor. We call it Turkey. So he was from the southern part of Turkey. And so when he carried on the gospel, he carried it into Asia Minor. He did a lot of missionary work in Turkey. And then from Turkey, he went into among the Greeks in Greece, and then, of course, into Rome. So what we have when we're reading the book of Acts, just the beginnings in Jerusalem, and then moved to Syria, into Antioch, and then Paul's work, which a large part of the book of Acts is based on all the missionary works and spread of Paul's carrying of the gospel into Turkey, Greece, and Rome. But Rome was not established. All the congregations in Rome were not established by Paul. They were established by Aramaic-speaking followers of Jesus, merchants, who went into Rome and in trade, and they spread among the Jews, among the people there, and the language they spoke it in all was in Aramaic. And they spread the gospel in Rome. So when Paul got to Rome after he had been arrested and was brought to be tried in Rome, because he was also a Roman citizen, because he was born in Turkey, in the southern part of Turkey, he was able to claim Roman citizenship and to be tried in Rome. And that's when he did work among the Romans. But the church, its congregations had already been established. There were no church buildings. They were just gatherings of people. Some of them were in synagogues, and some of the Jewish people there then turned to the teachings of Jesus. In fact, when he was in Greece, what he did was go into a synagogue and teach Jesus, and he broke the synagogue up, and so they could no longer meet in the synagogue. They had to meet in someone's home. Sometimes they met in open parks and stuff like that to have their meetings. And this is what the book of Acts takes up with. We get no history of how the early generation, the first generation under Jesus, spread it into Syria before Paul ever came on the scene, and into Beth Nachrein. Beth Nachrein is what we call ancient Mesopotamia. That Mesopotamia is the Greek, the Aramaic term is the house of the rivers, means the land of the rivers, the two rivers, which is Euphrates and the Tigris. And there it spread, but we have no history written on that. Everything we have is gone Western. And finally, when it settled in Rome and Constantine took it over, we don't have that in the scriptures. We only have what Paul did and what happened in Jerusalem and what happened in Syria. But it doesn't tell us much of how it went into among the Assyrians and among the Chaldeans, all of that. It went completely eastward, but that's not recorded. So when you're reading the book of Acts, you got to realize it is a limited history of the spread of the gospel. It is not the full history of what happened in the first three generations of the teachings of Jesus. Most people don't even know that. They just strictly go by the book of Acts, and that's why we don't hear much about the Semitic spread, how it went into the Asian world, clear into China and Japan. That's it, spread way into there among the Mongols and all of that. But that hardly is taught at all. You have to go to higher schools to get that, and it's certainly not ever mentioned in the churches, and when they teach the Bible, they don't mention that at all. So realize that when you're reading the book of Acts, it is a limited teaching on the expansion of the early movement that Jesus and his teachings were being spread. That is a very short synopsis of the book of Acts. There's a lot of wonderful things in the book of Acts. It talks not only talks about the martyrdoms, but the healings that the apostles did. And then, of course, like I said, it goes into Paul and what he did in Asia Minor, that is in Turkey and in Greece, and finally ending up in Rome. But then even the end of his life, we're not even told what happened to that. We have to go to other sources to find out what happened to him. And they believe he was eventually martyred, but he went as far, they believe he went even into Spain and these other places, but that's not recorded in what we call the Bible. So there it is in a little tight nutshell, the overall look at the book of Acts.
That's beautiful. So well articulated.
Thank you.
So can you help us understand a little bit, Rabbi, the debate then about where the origin of the language is of all of these players? You know, you're talking about people that are coming from southern Turkey but are part of the tribes of Israel. So, but yet they're going into the Greco-Roman territory. So could you talk to us a little bit about historically correct understanding about the languages that were at play and what we have misunderstood in the West differently than what we believe in the East that you're talking about has gone east into China and India?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, you got to realize that most people don't realize that the basic language of Jesus was Aramaic. And I've read books written by scholars of how Jesus spoke Greek and the apostles spoke Greek. They did not. Now, Paul spoke some Greek, but, you know, you're talking about Eastern people, and they didn't have schools like we have heavy schools today to teach you all these different languages. Paul spoke Aramaic, and he spoke probably just, you know, to get along in Greek. But everything he did was done in the Aramaic language. But what dominated us here in the West, because of understanding what Paul did, it went from Aramaic to Greek to Latin. And all our churches were established basically on the New Testament based on Greek. But the churches themselves, because when it went from Greek to Latin, where Latin became more, when they went more into Rome, and the Pope was established, the idea of the Pope, then Latin became the major language for biblical studies, and then Greek, and hardly anything in Aramaic. However, the Pope's now, Pope Pius XII was the first one in his encyclical in the 1940s, was pointing to the fact that we needed to return to Aramaic, because that was the original language of the apostles and the spread. Now, how do we know Jesus spoke Aramaic? We know it from history. The major language in Israel when Jesus was born was the Aramaic tongue. Now, it wasn't the full Eastern Aramaic. It was the more of the Western form of the Aramaic. The full Eastern has to do, you know, of course, with the Assyrians and Chaldeans. We're talking about Mesopotamia. So, and dialects were broken up. But Jesus was from Galilee, and the Assyrians had reestablished Galilee, and in the north, in northern Israel, they spoke a dialect of Aramaic, which was closer to the Assyrian form in those ancient days. Now, we're not talking about the Assyrian modern, what we call it, modern Assyrian today, but the actual language itself is the same, but dialects have different sounds. And so in the West, Jesus spoke a form of Assyrian Aramaic. Galilean Aramaic was different from Southern Aramaic that was spoken in, now I'm talking about dialects, that was spoken in Judea and in Jerusalem. That's why when Peter was speaking and mentioning different things, one of the maid servants pointed out the fact, oh, you must be one of them, a Galilean, because I recognize your dialect. You're from the north. You're from Galilee. So he spoke a northern dialect of Aramaic, which was more of the eastern from Assyria form of Aramaic and the Chaldean form, which was spoken in basically Assyrian, because the Assyrians repopulated Galilee. And of course, the Babylonians, when they came in, they took the southern state of Israel and more of the dialect of the Aramaic from Chaldea was spoken in the south. Most people are not familiar with this. This is why they didn't care. In the south, they had a hard time with Jesus because he spoke in that northern Galilean form of Aramaic and not in the southern form. When they understood what he was saying, even just like you can understand different dialects today, but they knew where he was from. And that's why in the Gospel of John, they were questioning his idea as the people were calling him the Mashiach, the Messiah, the Anointed One. And they said, no, he can't be. This is in the 7th chapter of the Gospel of John. He says he can't be because he's speaking that northern dialect. He's from there. He's from Galilee. He's not here from the south. He doesn't come from Bethlehem. He doesn't come from all this. And they were arguing with him. He cannot be the Mashiach. He cannot be because of the way he spoke. This knowledge is not known, is not even taught or realized because the books came to us here in the West from Greek. The New Testament came to us from the Greek language, but it started originally all in Aramaic, and the Aramaic text does not agree fully with the Greek New Testament text. And so there's a big argument. And what happened is once it got established and a chair was made, Greek was the original, then Latin, then we lost a lot of things. But there were many dialects of Aramaic spoken all over in ancient Mesopotamia. And the Church of the East established all different sees, now sees means headquarters, of all over ancient Mesopotamia, and we hardly knew about it here in the West. So that's a little bit on the language. It goes way deeper, and I would spend too long a time talking about that, getting into languages. The basic thing is to understand that Aramaic was the foundation of the teachings of Jesus, of the spread of his gospel, which is called the Swartha. The Swartha, that we use the term, people use the term Evangelion, but that is not really Aramaic. That is Greek, and it's an Aramaic phrasing of the Greek term evangel. So we say Evangelion, but it's really Swartha. Swartha is the original meaning, which means the great expectation, what you've been hoping for has finally come. That's the meaning of, and that's why in Greek they call it evangel, because they called it the good news, which means the news you've been expecting. The Messiah has come. The Anointed One has come. A whole new way of life has been opened to us. We have opened up our hearts, our souls, because of this new teaching that has come, this fresh spiritual enlightenment. And that's what's the problem with the world today. We're not hearing the gospel. We're hearing doctrinized, institutionalized teachings of Jesus and more Paul than Jesus. And that's why we don't have the joy and the peace that we should be having. And the churches were supposed to be the doorway, because the word church in Aramaic, it simply means a gathering. Not, church is not a building. Church, it's a congregation. It's live. It's living people. It's living stones, not dead stones, not stones which we build churches out of, or brick which we build churches out of, or wood, whatever it is. The church is people, live, living souls that have emotions, that have thoughts, that have all that. It's living. It's alive. But it became something else. Once it became institutionalized and we took up Greek and Roman, then we used the Greek and Roman system. We began to doctrinize and make dogmatic statements. And once you make a dogmatic statement, you've lost the simplicity that Jesus had. He was among the peasant people. He was among the country people. He was very simple, and this is why the people loved him, and authorities were having trouble with him, just like today. When you teach from the Aramaic, who you'll have trouble with? With authorities, and those that the authorities have brainwashed, those who sit under them, and they miss the simple teachings. Well, there's a little bit about the language and what has happened to us today.
Fantastic. I appreciate your historical accuracy, but also your passion. Ravi, one of the highlights of our conversation today, I would like to be on the commentary that you and Dr. Lemsa wrote.
Yes.
on the Book of Acts, I want to remind people that they can go to your website, Noohra.com. That's Noohra.com. You can purchase a copy of, there are 14 commentaries in the series. That's what we're going over this year in our series, Let There Be Light. Each month we're going over one or two of the books. This month is the commentary on the Book of Acts. Can you talk a little bit to our audience, Ravi, please, about what people will find in particular in this commentary, why it's such an important tool for deeper learning, and maybe even some highlights from the book that you would like to share with our audience?
Sure. Very good. Thank you. Yes. Well, first of all, they got to realize this is not like a normal commentary. I stayed away from doctrinal issues and church dogmas. And strictly, Dr. Lambs and I, we strictly worked, and Dr. Lambs, he's responsible for most of it. In Acts, he's responsible for most of it in the Book of Acts here. And I just added some other things in here and straightened out for the English coming from Aramaic. It's a commentary based on the Aramaic language of Jesus and the ancient Near Eastern customs and culture. That's what makes it so fascinating. It brings you into the ancient Near East itself. For instance, when you come into the Book of Acts, it talks about the ascension of Jesus when he is raised into the heavens. You have to understand that that was a spiritual event, and the only ones that would have seen that would have been those who were with Jesus and a part of him, where they could actually see spiritually him ascending into the heavens. So we go into that in the first part, taken up in the clouds, which means he was to become universal. In Aramaic, when you're taken up in the clouds, it means you have succeeded in your mission. And we say in English, oh, I'm in cloud nine. I'm very happy and everything. But in Aramaic, it means to succeed in a mission. And taken up in the clouds, we go into detail on that and the meaning of it. And it's supposed to be 40 days after the resurrection before he ascended into heaven. Again, the term 40 is an Aramaic way of speaking, which means it was a special time of transformation. 40 is the number of transformation, where you go through a change, we go into all of that here in the Book of Acts for explaining that they needed that time where they could change their ideas, because the apostles were expecting a physical kingdom, and Jesus would sit on the throne, and they would have their separate little throne seats to be put upon and to rule. But instead, what the Book of Acts is showing you in the first couple of chapters is that the kingdom was a spiritual kingdom, not a political, physical one. So we go into that in the Book of Acts and explain all of that and in Acts. And then we go into some of the healings that the Apostle Peter did. It's told in story form, so you're brought into it and into a lively expression of what is going on there at that time. It's like a little storybook. This is what I liked about it. It wasn't like most commentaries where it's arguing different ideas. It's just telling you what took place and what it means. You see, most people don't realize it, but a lot of modern scholars have debunked the Book of Acts and said most of it is all made up. None of it is true. And that is a shame, because they've ruined the simplicity that is there. So what we do is go into the thoughts and feeling behind it. For instance, when it says, and they commune daily with one accord in the temple, breaking bread from the house to house. This is how it was being spread. And did eat their meal with gladness and singleness of heart. So we go into the Eastern customs. Semites, when visiting one another's homes, eat bread together. A neighbor or a stranger who enters the house while members of the household are eating is invited to sit and eat with them. And this is how they spread. This is how it spread. One who enters after or before the meal is asked if he has eaten and would like to eat. Most of the guests and visitors eat when they are asked. Some decline, however, even though they have declined, they are expecting to be urged by the host a number of times. A host will usually beg the guest at least 7 times to sit down and partake of the meal. You know, I used to have a hard time with Dr. Lamson when he used to refuse certain things when I was working with him, and I'd have to argue with him to take what I wanted him to take. But it was the Eastern custom. But this is what we go into in the commentary and explain how it was dynamic and living. And when priests or prominent men would enter the house, the women immediately began to cook and set the table for them. When Jesus entered the house, for instance, of Martha and Mary, Martha started cooking and making preparations. Hospitality is very important, is shown as a token of honor. And so there's the verse of scripture in it, and it fits. What I've done is explain the background of it. And the term bread in Aramaic means food. When a host asks a guest if he has eaten, he says, "Have you eaten bread?" This means, "Have you had lunch or supper?" When a family is impoverished, it is said they have no bread, but it means they have no food. The reason for this is that in the Near East, bread is the main article of food, and no meal is complete without it. People consume a large quantity of bread at each meal. This is the simplicity of this in the book of Acts, but we also go into the spiritual meanings in here too, and talk about Paul and Barnabas and about how men of God are feared and what happens to Ananias and Sapphira. God did not kill them. Most people think that God killed them, didn't do such a thing. But when Stephen was stoned to death, before he was killed, he saw the visions of heaven. And even though he was being pelted with stones and brought to death from the stoning, he was seeing heaven at the same time. Today we put out books called Near Death Experiences. When Stephen was being killed, being martyred, he had a near-death experience, and then he died. He was seeing heaven as he was being pelted with these stones and being killed. That's another thing. We go into the visions and different healings that they had in the book of Acts and explain all the meaning of it. And people today, this is why most modern scholars debunk the book of Acts, because it deals with these spiritual matters that are in there. Because we're so heavy into materialism and into physicality and only what the physical eye see, we don't see the spiritual world. And we were meant to see the spiritual world, always meant to. We were supposed to be living from that point of view, and that's what the kingdom is. So we go into that, and I explain about Paul when he was on the famous mount in Greece there, and he tries to convert all the Greek philosophers and about the unknown God. We go into all of that, and dreams and visions and trance states that they did, all of that. It's all here in the book of Acts. For instance, when Paul himself saw the risen Jesus, he didn't see the man. He heard his voice. He had a spiritual experience on the road to Damascus. He was heading to the synagogues in Damascus to try to stop the flow of people who were accepting Jesus' teachings in Damascus, and he was against it, and he was on his way to persecute the people in Damascus, those who were accepting Jesus' teachings. And that's when he had the vision. And we go into detail on the vision and how did he get it? How did he get this vision? What happened to him? What happened to him? I don't even know what time it is. Do I have time to go into that?
Yes, we've still got about 10 minutes.
Okay. Well, for instance,
by all means.
He had been persecuting in Jerusalem and in Syria. He had been persecuting the followers of Jesus, throwing them into jail and beating them and all that. But what happened is he felt something from these followers of Jesus. They didn't put a curse on him. They didn't tell him he was an evil man for doing this. They didn't do any of that. In fact, they blessed him instead of putting a curse on him, which it bothered him. It got into his mind. It got into his emotions. And Saul then felt, well, but they're changing it. They're leaving their true faith of Jerusalem. They're leaving it and the temple worship and all that, and therefore, which they didn't, they still went to the temple. They still were Jews. They went to the temple, but they embraced these other teachings, and he was affected by the way they behaved. They didn't talk back mean to him, even though he was mean to them. And on the road to Damascus, this must have been rolling over in his mind and in his heart and in his spirit. These people are different. Because remember now, he never sat under Jesus. He was a little boy when Jesus probably was born. He's, as I said, he's the third generation of Christians. So he didn't even know anything about Jesus, and yet he was persecuting the followers. And when he saw how they behave and how different they were, totally different from the culture, they had broken away from some of the culture that said, those who curse you, you should put a curse back on them, all that was changed. Jesus broke the enculturation of that time and changed the whole demeanor of people because of the way he taught. So Paul was being affected by that. His name was really Saul at this time. He was named after the first king of Israel, which was King Saul. And he was named after that. And his name Saul, the Saul, means to ask. But when he was on the road to Damascus to go persecute some more the followers of Jesus, who were Jewish people who had accepted his teachings, and he was on his way there, and this was all rolling up in his emotions and mind and heart, and wham, he had a spiritual experience. A light came upon him, and he heard a voice, and the voice said, "It's hard to kick against the pricks," which means in Aramaic, you're throwing yourself up against something that is real and it's hurting you. He was experiencing mental agony because he knew he was doing something wrong by hurting these followers of Jesus. And now he hears this voice. And the voice is telling him, "I am Jesus of Nazareth." He didn't see Jesus. He only heard Jesus. And he knew because the voice spoke to him and told him, "I am Jesus of Nazareth." And he had to say "of Nazareth." And it's only written that way in the Aramaic text. It just says, "I am Jesus" in most other texts. But he says "of Nazareth" because Jesus was a common name. And so it had to be depicted as Jesus of Nazareth. And the voice told him that he was working against something that was not right. And that's when he converted to the teachings of Jesus, and he became blind. And when he was there in Damascus, that's when he was healed in Damascus from that vision that he had. The light was so bright and the voice was so strong, he had to be healed, and he was healed. And that's when he began to learn. He thought, I've got to change my mind about this. There's something that is happening. So that's all there in the book of Acts, explaining what happened to Paul with this vision state that he had. So there, I did as briefly as I could from it. When you get the book of Acts, we go into more detail on that. How was that?
That's
okay.
That's great, Robbie. That was fantastic. That was fantastic. You do a fantastic job of summarizing hundreds of pages into a few sentences. But I know that some of the audience would like to study with you more in depth. Could you, in our last few minutes together here, could you please tell our audience about the classes you teach and how they might be able to participate?
Yes, on every Wednesday night, if you go to our website, Noohra, Noohra.com or .org, you see I have a class every Wednesday night, and it's open. It's done on a free will offering. There's no one standing at the door, no one ready to charge you, nothing like it's open for you. And we go by, if you want to send in a love offering, you do it to keep us going on every Wednesday night from 7 o'clock to 8. It's 1 hour. It's on Zoom. You have to contact the foundation, or you can go on the website to find out how to get on. And you contact the foundation, we'll send you a link. And then once a month, on the second Saturday of each month, I teach a two-hour session. I forgot to tell you, too, that in the first hour, I go for about 30 or 40 minutes, and then I open it for questions on Wednesday nights. But on the class I teach once a month, on the second Saturday of each month, I'm teaching on how to become disciples of Jesus. And it's for 2 hours, from 1 until 2, that's Eastern time. So you have to adjust it according to that on Zoom. Those are my two classes that I teach, and I'm hopefully, it depends on what can happen this summer, I'll be teaching again a beginner's course on the Aramaic language, not for conversation, but to be able to read scripture, to read it yourself. So it's biblical Aramaic, the way it's written in the New Testament. So I'll be teaching that sometime this summer. We haven't said it fully yet, but we're getting ready for that. That's a little bit of what we're doing. And I put out a paper called Noohra, which means light. And I'm serializing one of Dr. Lambs's books called The Man from Galilee, which is the story of Jesus' life. And I'm doing it from the manuscript that he sent into Doubleday, which was 800 pages. But they reduced it to 300 and really reduced a lot of it. So what I'm doing is taking the original 800 pages, reworking it and filling it in, and showing you more that Doubleday took out and didn't publish when they published his book on The Man from Galilee. And I have that in the paper that I put out three times a year. It's called New Her Light. And if you become a member of the foundation, you get that paper that comes out. That's just about it. I'm not good about advertising myself.
That's all right. I wanted them to just be able to hear the facts, but I'll toot your horn for you, no problem.
Okay.
I want everyone to know that when you become a member, which is nominal, by the way, $30, $40, $50 for an annual membership, you get a special code. That code gets you 20% off of any of the products in the bookstore. The bookstore has books, it has DVDs, it has books to learn
the classical Aramaic language. You can get a workbook, work at your own pace. Very, very easy to follow. It is it's a language that has a lot of nuance to it. So I definitely recommend getting into a class with Rabbi Eriko. But the material is there on his website. The Bible by Dr. Lemsa, the Peshitta Aramaic to English Bible is there. The idioms. There are DVDs that are on there. So go explore Nuhura.com. Rabbi, thank you so much for being with me today. I know that we will be back together in June 20th at 2 o'clock. We will be talking about another book in the series of commentaries in our monthly series called Let There Be Light with Dr. Rocco Eriko and myself. So join us June 20th, 2 p.m. Eastern. Bobby, thank you, and I look forward to seeing you soon, God willing.
Okay, yes. All righty.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. That was our good friend and mentor and teacher, Dr. Rocco Eriko of the Nuda Foundation. We're together each month, every third Tuesday of every month on this Let There Be Light series. And if you'd like a book to start, you know, so a lot of people tell me, Rebecca, where can I start? There's so much that it seems like I can be studying. Where can I start? Here's what I recommend. Get the Peshitta Bible, get the Idioms book, and get Let There Be Light. The first two by Dr. George Lemsa, the third by Dr. Eriko. I really believe that is a fantastic starter kit to give you, I mean, years of study. That'll keep you busy for years, really. The commentaries are priceless, and I advocate having the series as I am building my library of not just the commentaries, but books by Dr. Lemsa and other books by Dr. Eriko, like Let There Be Light and others. There's a book that follows Let There Be Light. There's a whole library there. Go explore. You'll get a discount code. You'll be able to save. Of course, everything that you spend there, whether it's by purchase or by donation, forwards the work of the Aramaic light being preserved in this world. This is the language that, unless people deliberately make it their interest, deliberately learn it, deliberately read it, deliberately write it, it will go away. And so thank you to those of you who this work resonates with and you support this effort. You can visit my website, livinggodspromises.com, where you'll see upcoming classes. This Thursday we begin our six-week series, Sex and the Spirit, followed by our May 21st Sunday kickoff at 12 p.m. Eastern of Aramaic Light on the Beatitudes, written by Dr. Rocco Eriko. So you can pick up that book and register for the class. And then lastly, we've got our first Friday in June is open to register for the Spiritual Gifts Workshop, Spiritual Gifts Serving the Kingdom in Everyday Life. It's my privilege to serve you in classes, in one-on-one sessions, on our TikTok lives and all the social media platforms, and of course, right here on Great I Am Radio. Feel free to send in any requests you have for topics, and stay tuned for special guests. If you'd like to be a special guest, or if you'd like to nominate someone to be a special guest, please send a message to my producer, Maggie, at connect@greatiamradio.com. Please join us on the airwaves live every week for 60 minutes at 2 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays. But you can always visit us at greatiamradio.com, where you can check us out on demand and listen to any of our episodes in the archives whenever it suits your mood. Thank you again for being with me today. It's been quite an experiment being with you from the rocky roads of Tennessee. Big shout out to my cousin John for the smooth travels, and God bless all of you. I'll be with you next week here on greatiamradio.com. God bless you.